go, buddy.
Thank you. My name is Craig, and I'm an addict. So wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about kind of the process of kind of getting here, because this was very important for me. When I came into this program, I started to meet people that were in this program and started to see, well, first thing I really started to do was actually believe them, that they had come from a walk of life that I had came from or similar, and that they had started to change their life around. In the process of that occurring, they told me what they did. And then I started to hear things along the lines of like, if you want what we have, you got to do what we did, right? My first attempt at recovery in Narcotics Anonymous, I was willing to do certain aspects of the program, but other aspects I wasn't willing to do. One of those aspects was that I wasn't willing to work the steps. I could tell you I was willing to work the steps, but willingness, you know, requires action. So I never started step one in my first attempt at recovery, therefore I didn't make it, right? But one of my favorite lines in the literature, and anybody that has been around me for any amount of time can tell you this is one of my favorite ones. A relapse may be the jarring experience that brings about a more rigorous application of the program. I say it all the time. Some people that know me well probably hate that I say it so many times. But that's the one that's like here, right? Because that's the biggest part of my story. In February of 2017, I got to the point where I basically knew that if I didn't stop, the chances of death were not only a likelihood, but were more than gonna happen pretty soon. So I made a decision, you know, and not saying that this was right or wrong, but at least for me, I made a decision to go into treatment. I went into treatment, went through the whole process of that, you know, had some interaction with some members of Narcotics Anonymous that came into the program that I was in through H&I that I had known from the area from my time the year before. And I said, this time I'm gonna come out and all the good things that I did in my first attempt, because I was doing a lot of good things. I was hitting meetings, I had a sponsor, I had a home group. I'm gonna continue to incorporate those into my program, but I'm also gonna start working the steps. One of the better decisions I ever made in my life. Work steps 1, 2, and 3. You know, obviously I'm not gonna go into them too much. You know, we just had a meeting about that. Those are very important. And then I got to step 4. And step 4 for me was that moment, that line in the sand, right? It's like, okay, because we have a saying, 3-step shuffle, right? I didn't want to be one of those people that came in, worked the first 3 steps, and tried to ride out as much abstinence time as I could. Because I figured I could probably get some abstinence time just simply off of working those 3. But I also seen whenever people were picking up multiple years and stuff like that, and then I would talk to them, they'd be like, you know, I'm on this step, and it wasn't 3. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and move forward. If I'm being completely honest about 4, it wasn't that hard for me to write. Because some of the stuff that was on my 4th step, I was proud of. I'm not proud of it today, but my bizarre behavior, you know, some of the things that I did, my pride and ego about certain things that had happened, I was actually I was willing to tell people about that. Because again, that was part of my psyche, right? You know, I did this and I did that. Now looking back on it, it wasn't good. What that also started to develop was a pattern of actions and behaviors in my life that, you know, I didn't care for, was starting to not care for. So going through the process, obviously, you know, one of the patterns that I seen was the majority of the time that I got into any kind of trouble or had issues in my life, drugs and alcohol were definitely present. You know, definitely present. So that one, but that one is so obvious that, you know, that's like saying the sun's bright to me. But there was other things that I started to realize, like patterns and different things that started, bugs are starting to get me already. One of the things that I started to realize was that although during the majority of these things that I did, I, obviously drugs and alcohol were a part, but it was also a lot of like-minded people around me that had the same mindset that I had. And that's where I started to make the adjustment, like in who I was hanging out with. I actually probably started to make that adjustment well before I formally started step four. Because people had told me, you got to watch who you're hanging out with. You can't be around people that are using, people that are doing those, you know, things that you may have done in the past when you used. So I started to clean up a lot of those areas of my life. And you know what? Freedom started to come. As far as, you know, like the character defects that were established there, I knew there was a few that needed addressed really quickly. In my sponsorship family at the time, we did the 7 deadly sins. So we basically break down character defects into one of those 7 categories, and we do what's called a big three. As soon as I heard about this big three, I immediately knew exactly which would be number one out of the 7 deadly sins: anger. And I wasn't wrong entirely. It turns out that in the process of going through four and making check marks to determine all of the deadly sins, one actually tied anger, which surprised me. It was sloth, which I had to like sit back and think about. I still think about it to this day, because if I wanted to go out and get something like drugs, I was not lazy about it. I was chop, 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 let's get this done. If I was at work trying to make some money for drugs, I would chop, chop, chop. But if it was something to do with bettering my life or helping somebody else out with no payment, I'll sit on the couch. The house could be on fire, but you know what I mean? It wouldn't matter. And that was something that I had to make an adjustment to. And I still, to this day, I'm trying to make that adjustment, right? I know there's things to do around the house. I know there's, you know, time where I could be working on my step work. I know where there's times where I could have made it to the meeting that night, but I don't, because I want to sit on the couch. I want to do this. I want to relax. But I got to fight that. And that's what, you know, this battle to me is about. It's, you know, yeah, becoming entirely ready, but at the same time, like, I got to look at, this thing helped me. This thing saved me. Like, people, I've heard many people say, thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. Like, you guys, the majority of you people would have never met me had I not got clean. You know what I mean? And I don't know that I'd be here. You know, and I know that's cliche, like, oh, I probably wouldn't have made it much longer, but that was a reality that I was facing, like, directly. I don't know if I would have made it. So, you know, through the process of that, I'll say this, and of all the ones that I twist, pieces of literature, this one I twist the most, in my head, mostly. It says, rarely have we seen someone who works this program to the best of their ability fail. I don't work. There's always something that I could do in addition to what I've done so far for my recovery. I don't work myself to the bone. I don't, you know what I mean? I do what allows me to not feel pain at that moment. You know what I mean? And that's another one that I fight, because I'm like, oh, you know, I'm probably not gonna use today, but I am feeling some type of way about a certain thing. And that's one of those ones where, you know, that's all well and dandy if I don't use. But if I do end up finding myself in a corner that I can't get clean out of, then I got a problem, you know what I mean? So I think being a little more proactive about that is something that I'm, you know, I try to do on a regular basis, but want to be even more proactive in. 5, I got a semi-funny story. It's funny in my head. The day that I was going to be doing my fifth step, we had it all set up, me and my sponsor, and my sponsor lived about 5 minutes away from my house. And he was like, come on over. And I'm like, all right, yep, I'll be over there in, you know, 5-10 minutes. 45 minutes later, I had pretty much wore out the asphalt around his house, on the surrounding blocks of his house, and I finally walked in. And it's such a weird thing, because, like I said, once I started it, again, I was dealing with those pride issues about being, talking about this and grandiosity and, you know, ego and stuff associated with some of the stories in that four step. But I was in a weird way also scared to do it. I think that what I was scared of is that this was going to mark a change in my life. This, again, going back to that line in the sand, right? Is like, if I do this, I got to keep now going. You know what I mean? And that's, to me, that was a scary thing, because there were certain aspects of my life that I had become so accustomed to and so comfortable with. They weren't good, by the way. They were very bad. You know, like some people, and this might not be your story, but like if the cops came right now and said, Craig, you're going to jail, I'd be like, okay. And I'll just walk in. It's not one of those things where I'm going to be like, fall down on the ground and they have to hog tie me. I'll be like, all right, cool. You know what I mean? I understand. I know what to do when I get there. I know those things. Not healthy, not good for me. But again, I had become so accustomed to it. And then the trick, the switch in that, for me at least, was becoming so accustomed with this way of life that one now seems foreign. And, you know, it's been a long time since I've had to even sweat being incarcerated or anything like that. So I'll kind of wrap up with this little bit of hope for anybody that might be going through it. The last day that I used was February 11th, 2017. I had used, and then my aunt asked me to give her a ride over to her son's house. I give my aunt a ride over to the house. I remember dropping her off, and then I remember leaving her house. And the next thing that I remember was a police officer knocking at the side door of my mother's car. I was dead to rights. You know, there was no getting my way out of, wiggling my way out of this. You know, if there was ever a DUI, that was it. And they pulled me out of the car, all that stuff, put me in the back of the squad car. About 5-10 minutes passes, he pulls me out of the car, takes me to the back of the car, starts asking me a bunch of questions, name, date of birth, all that stuff. Social Security, I give him all that. And then at some point, I stopped him dead in his tracks. And I kind of broke down, and I said, listen, man, I've been doing this for a long time. I understand if I'm going to jail today, and I accept that. I was in recovery for about 4.5 months last year, and I'm tired of doing this. He ended up putting me back in the squad car. Next time that he came back to the door, my mom was pulling up at the same time with my uncle. He opened the door and he said, this is what I'm gonna do for you, Craig. You're not driving that car home, first and foremost. You're not. It's not happening. I was like, I accept that one as well. You got that. I'm giving you 72 hours to get yourself into a treatment center. If you're not, we're coming to arrest you, all that nine. And as I was starting to walk, he released me from the cuffs. I started to walk away from the car and head to my mother's car. The last interaction I had with a police officer outside of like a speeding ticket, where I was actually in committing a criminal act, he said, Craig, that doesn't mean that these charges are going away. And I remember at that time accepting that too, right? Fast forward, I go to treatment. I'm in treatment less than 24 hours later. Go through the whole process. And then on, it would have been what, February 11th, 2024, I realized it had been 7 years since that day. And I never seen one single piece of documentation. I was never ordered to go to any preliminary hearings. I was never arraigned on nothing. No paperwork. I'm not gonna call them and ask them. I promise you that. But to the best of my knowledge and my working understanding of the criminal justice system, I'm like, maybe it was a paper error, right? Maybe it was the end of his shift. Maybe it was God. I tend to believe that it was God. And I think that God, seeing that how I came out and how I worked the Narcotics Anonymous program, and he's seen fit to make sure that those charges were never levied against me. That's all I got. My name is Craig. I'm an act.
Thanks, Craig. All right, I'd like to introduce the second speaker is Paula Key from Freedom in Hazelwood, the East End area.
Oh, I gotta wear this thing.
Yep.
Just wear it like that?
Yep, that's all. That's good to
go. All right then, fancy. Okay, hi everybody, I'm an addict. My name is Paula.
Hi.
This is cool. I haven't been up here in a while. Came up a couple years ago, I spoke, and then went home. I haven't camped in a while, but I'm cheap camping in a cabin. But that's okay. Trying to get back at it, right? So 4 and 5, I was thinking about it, I made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I know when I first got here and heard those words, they were so intimidating. The process of doing it wasn't as intimidating as the words were. You know, a moral inventory. I was like, well, I'm fucked up, so, you know, there you go. That's simple. But it's not how it works. But I remember having a sponsor that also said, you got to do a first, like a solid 1, 2, and 3 first. Because you don't want to delve into all that probably right away without getting some foundation here. And can't hear. So building a foundation here. When I first got here, I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea about anything in life except for I didn't want to hurt anymore. That's it. So I ended up, landed in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And that's God. And grabbed on. In hindsight, I grabbed on. It didn't feel like that when I first got here. I had no clue about anything, man, nothing. All I knew is I didn't want to hurt anymore. And, you know, I came here, I had kids, I had no job, no house, none of that. There was no doubt in my mind that I was an addict. That was very clear. And then my life was unmanageable. That was very clear, sort of. I didn't realize how unmanageable, right? So anyway, working through those steps and being afraid, and people would talk about, well, you just got to write it down and do it like this and do it like that. And here you can come over and do this and do that. They didn't have a step working guide then. I'm kind of glad about that, though. I don't know if I would have done all that. I've had the opportunity to do steps with sponsees working out of that. So that's kind of cool. But I remember writing that, and it took me a while. And people would say, hey, you got to write that step without thinking about the fifth step, because they're two separate things, because I wasn't really telling you all my shit. Because my fear was you were going to say, oh, you did that. You can't stay here. Or you're just so broken that that's it. That is not the way it works. So, you know, I write this fourth step after I'd been coming around for a little bit. I don't even know how long. And the sponsor I had at the time, like, I didn't have really much of anything, right? Like I said, I took the bus everywhere I went. And I remember Debbie lived up in Brookline somewhere. And she said, well, come on over to my house, and we'll go over the step, like the fifth step. And I'm like, okay. So I get on the bus, and I go over to her house, terrified. And I didn't have friends like this before, but we go upstairs in her room. She tells her kids and her husband, stay out of here, because they're used to what we do here. And I remember starting to share some things with her that I thought that I wouldn't share with people. And it wasn't that they were the most horrible things, they just made me feel very shameful, right? They were some things that had just fed that shame in my life. Not so much the guilt, because I had a lot to be guilty about, like, don't do that shit no more. But the shame that we've been talking about, that actually, like, that's so embedded and so ingrained that you know, it was hard to get past that. A searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, that first 4-step was all the stuff I did. And someone said to me once, look, you already lived through all that. So writing it down is not going to make it any worse. I didn't believe that. I didn't. I was scared. But I did it anyway because I didn't want to live the way I was living anymore. Like I said, when I got here, I lived in a friggin' crack house or shooting gallery or whatever the hell it was with my children. I'm telling you, there was no doubt in my mind that I had a bit of a problem. Three of my kids anyways, the oldest one said, peace out. And that goes with a lot of the shame and all that kind of stuff, right? And so eventually I had a place to live. Wasn't my place, but I ended up with a better place to live than the shooting gallery. Eventually got a house. All the stories that have happened, they're not stories, this is my life. But all the things that have happened, I could go on and tell you all these places where I know that this higher power showed their face and said, hello. And one of my favorite ones is, and I'm going to tell it, the burning bush story. It's my favorite. I don't know what it has to do with 4 and 5. I think I was on 3 at the time, but whatever. I remember telling my sponsor, like, what's all this God shit? I don't understand. I really don't want to buy into it. My understanding of God was a little skewed. And I really wasn't buying into that. And I was trying to find my way, right? And I was like, well, what do you do? What do you do? You see, is God going to come down and, like, strike you with lightning bolts? And then you're going to see burning bushes? Well, I lived in a neighborhood that it was pretty rough, right? I look out the window that day. I don't remember exactly the time frame because that was a long time ago. I don't remember shit sometimes. But I remember looking outside and there's a fire truck out there. I live in the city. And the hedges were on fire. Thank goodness that happened. That was one of those things that said, well, shit. And I remember calling my sponsor going, what the hell? Okay. All right. It wasn't quite all that simple, but you know, things like that happened to me that I'm so grateful for, because maybe I wouldn't have stayed here if that would have happened, right? So just a brief, when I got here, we've been talking about this today. I'm looking out here at these beautiful people. And how blessed I am, I don't know about you, that I'm surrounded by loving and caring human beings. That has not been my story in my life till I got here. And we were talking about, on the way up here, we were talking about how it's kind of what we do now. It's kind of ingrained in us. This is how we do it. We think real deep. And don't other people do that? No, they don't. They don't. They just don't. We do. Sometimes it's very annoying. But, you know, here we are. And I didn't have that before. I have that now. But what I've learned is I have to trust you. I have to trust the program. I have to trust the steps, because the answer is always in the steps. The steps are never wrong. Oh, I'm wrong. And I know for sure you're all wrong sometimes. And I'll tell somebody about it. Try not to be judgy, but, you know, hey. So, you know, 4 and 5, what did it do? You know, there was the process of doing it, the first one. There was a process of writing it all down. And then the process of going to Debbie's house and on the bus. And Sharon, and it felt so weird. And it was just the weirdest freaking thing. Like, I don't want to, what? It's not that I didn't want to tell her stuff. It was just weird. Like, why do you do this? And I said everything that was in there. And a lot of it was a lot of shame-based stuff. Right, for me. And I remember her saying, oh yeah, it was no big deal. Oh, I did that too. Like, really? I mean, I know we hear that a lot here. Oh, I did that too. But that was so important. I think you talked about it. It's being connected all I ever wanted to do in my whole life was be a part of and be accepted. And I was pretty much willing to do anything, and I did do pretty much anything, to be accepted and be a part of something. I too thought it was a great thing that I was a really good junkie. Not really though, I really wasn't even good at that. But I was like, I finally belong somewhere, right? This is, if I get clean and don't use, where am I gonna go? What am I gonna do? Where am I gonna belong? Guess what? Here, right? Here. Nobody ever lied to me here. That book, oh, maybe some people lied, I don't know. But the book don't lie, the literature don't lie. Always going back to the literature don't frickin' lie. It just don't. So I do that fifth step, and I was like, okay, all right, I did the step. I don't know what I was waiting for. Something. I really, really was like, I don't know what it was, but I was waiting on something. Isn't this where the thing happens? It didn't. So I was like, oh. I had to go back outside, wait at the bus stop, get on the bus, after I just spilled my guts of my whole shameful life. That didn't feel good at the time. I know it was necessary. I know that was part of the process. That did not feel good at the time, let me tell you. But it did feel good sometime after that. I did it. It didn't even, at that point, it was like, I did it. I did something that was, you said it was good for me. Okay, I'll believe you. Because the way I was living was not good for me or anybody else in my life that was left in my life. So something about the fourth step though is some people burn them, some people do whatever they do with them. I didn't do that. So I had it sitting in a box in something, and my daughter found it once and she read the whole thing. That was not a good feeling. I mean, they kind of knew part of my history, but they didn't know it all. And part of what she heard was something she never knew, and that the, her, who she thought was her dad was not her dad. And that was fucking terrible. I was like, well, that really sucks. We're closer. We probably would have been closer because if I would have been more honest, but I couldn't do that. It all happened the way it was supposed to. But, and there's a part of me that was like, oh my God, why did I leave that sitting there? Why didn't I burn it? Why didn't I do this? You know what I've learned across the time, my time here? It all works out the way it's supposed to. When I'm able to give it up and let go, and I'm not always able to do that, a little more than I used to, but when I'm able to let go, I'm able to accept, okay, this is the way it is, this is what's happening. We talked about that on the way here and just being, okay, you know, now what? Let's move this way, let's move that way. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. Keep doing the best I can today. Some days that's really good shit. And some days, it's not. Some days I woke up and maybe got out of bed. Maybe didn't yell at anybody. You know, I got to like, I wasn't a little kid when I came here. I was in my mid to late 30s, I don't know, 37, whatever. And I remember someone saying, will you take your time? I'm like, oh, I ain't got no time. I'm old, man, I got to do something. Because I always wanted to go to school, right? So I went back to college a lot. One is too many, a thousand's never enough, right? Got to raise my kids. Their dad left because he wouldn't get clean. And he was abusive and mean and all that kind of stuff. And I remember the end of that too. He stayed there for a year using. That was not a good idea. But that's what I was capable of doing. And I was able to get to a place, and I had you beautiful people in my life, these women that said, okay. My sponsor never said, oh my God, you need to stop doing that. She might have said it to somebody else, but she didn't say it to me. And I'm so grateful for that. Like when I shared my stuff with her, she was like, okay, all right. when the pain gets great enough. I hated hearing that. Or you're right where you're supposed to be. Shut up. You talked about, too, about step 4 and 5 being this... people used to say things like, that separates the men from the boys and the women from the girls, and... Okay. I guess. But what it does do is it gives you that momentum, because I can stay stuck in the problem. I can figure out what the problem is and tell you about it all day long with every caveat to it, right? But what's the solution? Now, I have to sit in the problem sometimes for a little while. I still do. But I get to the place where I'm saying, okay, what's the solution? And the solution is doing step work and showing up at meetings and having a home group and being involved in service and having beautiful people that I can be a part of their lives, right? It's not just that you're there for me, but I can be a part of, and I've learned how to do that because I can be kind of selfish, right? Oh, gimme, come on. Yes, bring it all. I want it all because I want all the things. But how I keep that is by giving it away, right? I didn't understand that when I got here. What do you mean? How do you keep what you have by giving it away? That don't even make no friggin' sense. Yeah, not getting my drugs. I can't keep them. But it makes so much sense. It's this inner kind of thing, right? That's what the steps do for me. It's just getting in there and digging it out and pulling it back up. And even when it seems scary, because some of it's scary, done steps a couple times. I'm still working on steps. I need to get back to it, actually, because I can be very lazy. Procrastination. I'll do it later. But I'll watch some stupid cat video for 9 hours. That's the worst thing ever. That phone is like a friggin', I don't know what it is, but whatever. You know, when I think back when I got here, I had nothing. I had nowhere to live. I had nothing, absolutely nothing. And you all taught me you can do what, someone said once, you can do whatever you want. As long as you're willing to do the work to get there. That's the caveat, right? Well, shit. I don't know if I want to do all the work, but if you want something here in life, you have to do the work. At least I do. I don't know about you, but I do. So doing that 4th and 5th step was for me like kind of the stepping stone, right? No steps have come super easy to me. And I'm kind of grateful for that because I didn't just write some stuff down and pass it on. It was like, deep, right? And that's good though, because then it helps like clear it. It helps clear it out. It helps throw out the garbage, right? It helps, I was thinking like, you know how when you computer, you clear out the stuff, clear out the junk? Because that's how my head is most of the time. It looks like my computer screen at work does. There's a lot of shit on there. And sometimes you just gotta clear it out. And come back to basics and come back to, this is it. Sitting at a campfire in the daytime getting bit by bugs. They're not really biting, that's a lie, they're just annoying. With beautiful people, right? Like I said, I'm just trying to get back to it because this is where it is for me. This is where I found freedom, this is where I found love and acceptance, and this is where I'm able to give back. One of the things I've done throughout my recovery time has been involved in service. Because someone said, you want to stay around, you got to be involved in service. You can't be a thief. Don't be stealing that recovery and not giving back. Well, I've taken that to heart these days. I've been around here a little bit, more than a little bit. I've been around a while. I got to get old here. And sometimes it's like, oh, what happened? Well, you didn't die. That's what happened. You got better. And yeah, you got better. So I have to be involved in service. And Narcotics Anonymous taught me all that. It taught me how to work. It really did. It taught me how to like run meetings at work and how to shut my mouth sometimes at work. Although really at work, sometimes I wish they had principles. Because sometimes you want to say, well, you can't say that. But they can. But anyway. So 4 and 5, and so I talked about my daughter finding that step. And I'll tell you what, I had the most visceral bodily response to that. I wasn't at home at the time. I was at a thing for work, and she called me up, and I was like, oh, fuck. And I remember almost passing out, because it was just, I didn't know what to do. But you all taught me what to do. That was the longest drive home ever. And when I got home, we went to Eaton Park, because you're in Pittsburgh, and we were able to talk, and that was so uncomfortable, to say the least. But that's what this taught me. Put it out there, right? You've already been through it. Do some people, like when you make amends and stuff like that, well, this isn't that step, but, you know, some people are like, oh, that's okay. Well, no, it's not okay. And some people are like, fuck you. And that's okay. So anyway, 4 and 5. And that's where we're at. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm done. And thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Sure. Funny, I remember all that.
Are you kidding me? I'm going to take it home with me, okay? I know, right? Thanks.
Yeah. Job to do.
I thought you were coming for hot.
No.
Shit, it's the plan.
Yeah, dude. I'm not fucking this up, Sarah. You're not right.